too many principles. "This is the Lord's Round?" asked Glaward, dumbfounded.
"It was," said Leo, "the place his father had talked of as the cradle of noble ideals, where the great lords of the Union had engaged in dignified debate, where Arnold stood alone to challenge Morlick the Mad and change the course of history. It was easy to forget. They call it the Commons Round now. The stained glass windows, with their scenes from centuries of the Union's proud history, had been declared symbols of repression and replaced with free, equal, ideologically sound, clear glass from a new manufactory in the Three Farms. Harsh daylight wasn't kind to the place. The public galleries had been the playground of Adua's highest society. Now, if they hadn't died or fled the country, the highest society were staying well out of sight. The lowest had crowded into their place, rowdier every day. Sometimes bands would strike up bawdy songs above the assembly, the Union's government creaking to a halt like a mired cart till they could be clumsily evicted. The days were getting shorter, and the endless sessions dragged into the darkness, haggard faces lit by flickering candlelight. The place was chill as a tomb in the mornings, overhot by lunch, stinking of stale sweat and bad breath and chagger smoke. Representatives ate at their seats, remnants of meals rotting under the greasy benches. Gunner Broad and his men regularly broke up fights. A week before, a drunk had fallen from the upper gallery during a scuffle and been smashed to pulp on the floor before the high table. They'd paused long enough to scrape the corpse out, then carried on arguing while the mess was being mopped up.
"We need to be bloody civil!"
Ramnard, an old tailor with a face pitted by some childhood sickness, was making one of his rude demands for politeness.
"I damn well insist that Citizen Swarbrick reduce the number, not to mention the savagery, of his attacks upon members of this assembly in his newsbills and pamphlets."
Swarbrick leapt up as if he was mounted on a spring.
"Nothing would delight me more than to do so. The very instant we reduce the number, not to mention the corruption of the traitors, profiteers, and simple incompetents in this assembly."
Laughter, applause. The public gallery were as hungry for pain, tears, and passion as any audience at the theatre. Leo's clapping days were over, but he slapped the bench beside him one-handed in fake approval.
"Friends, please!"
Rizinow whined from his gilded chair.
"We still have so much work to do on our constitution. The people are restless, so easily roused to anger."
As if he hadn't ridden a wave of it to power.
"Citizen Swarbrick, we merely ask for a little moderation in the frenzy of your denouncements."
"Moderation sells no pamphlets," muttered Leo. Swarbrick was well aware of that.
"Sully the high principles of this august body with dishonesty? I would rather die."
He tore his shirt open to expose a wedge of pale chest.
"Plunge in your dagger there, citizen. I will happily wash the benches of this assembly with my heart's blood in the cause of the great change I have said so often."
"Washing them with something would be a step forward," Durand muttered in Leo's ear. Sitting between him and Glaward was far from comfortable, given the history. What happened in Sapani? What might still be happening? But it felt better than letting them sit together. In the clamour produced by Swarbrick's latest offer of martyrdom, representatives shouted over each other to be heard. It was noisy as a battle, and Leo watched the back and forth with the care of a general feeling out his moment to advance. A white-haired old merchant had kidnapped the floor now, his bass voice so powerful the benches seemed to vibrate.
if the attention of the assembly might be steered to other matters.
Far too easily, if anything.
I move that Commissioner Pike presents himself to explain his recent actions.
Hear, hear!
Blustered that heavy-set oaf who used to be one of Savine's partners. Court, was it?
The Commissioner's private war against the banks is bad for business. We're losing our advantage to the Styrians. It's a war out there in the markets.
A foreman from the three farms shook a great fist. He was called, appropriately enough, Hefty, though Leo wasn't sure whether it was a nickname or a surname.
There's a real fucking war going on.
Whoops in the gallery. He turned red in the face.
Begging your pardon.
Laughter in the gallery. He turned redder.
But there's royalist rebels to worry about in the east.
Treacherous bastards set on raising the king up above us again.
We couldn't possibly have that, drawled the king himself, whose gilded enclosure had become a wooden one, then a high dais, then a low dais, and finally a nursing chair with a rail around it. The usual rage, meanwhile, from above. Crumpled pamphlets were flung down, an apple core bounced from the shoulder of an ex-lord a few seats away, and Durand flinched.
Don't worry, said Leo. They rarely throw anything hard.
What's the people's army doing?
Someone howled.
I have men, but no leaders.
General Brint frowned from his chair beside Rizenau's.
I beg you, citizens, allow me to bring in officers from the old king's own.
How can we trust men who served the old regime?
Who else were they supposed to serve? That was the only regime going. You have staunch patriots.
Hefty stabbed a finger at Broad, who looked more worried than staunch.
Men of good common stock. It's not a question of birth, but of experience.
Principle trumps pragmatism, someone screeched.
Not on the battlefield, growled Brint. But the moment I need a grocer's advice on running an army, yours will be the first address I call at.
Leo winced. Brint was a good enough man, but he didn't understand the rules of this engagement.
Is it like this all the time? Murmured Glarwood.
Most of it.
How do they get anything done?
They don't.
Leo sensed the slightest lull in the melee, and he settled his stump in the socket of his iron leg, his crutch in his aching armpit.
Could you help me up?
The young lion!
Someone screeched as Glarwood guided him to standing, and the hall fell silent. As close as it ever got, anyway.
Citizens!
Leo limped a few steps onto the tiled floor so that he stood alone.
Friends! Good men and women of the Union!
He aimed that at the public galleries and got a reassuring murmur of support. He'd found if he could bring the scum up there onto his side, the scum down here wouldn't dare disagree.
We can't afford to bicker. We've got enemies everywhere, keen to divide us.
Leo was careful not to name the enemies, of course. He let everyone fill in their own.
Bastard Styrians,
someone snarled.
Bloody Southerners.
Aristocrats.
We've won a great victory against tyranny, he called. We've won the chance to forge a union that's the envy of the world.
And he set himself so he could strike his crutch on the tiles with an echoing bang.
But we have to build bridges. We have to bring good men in, like my old friends from Angland. Discord won't help us. We need equality. We need loyalty. We need unity.
He hobbled to his seat with the applause ringing in his ears and dropped down wincing, shaking his leg to loosen it on his sore stump. Glarwood looked more dumbfounded than ever.
You didn't say anything.
Perhaps he was faithful and diligent, like Savine said, but Leo had forgotten how slow he could be.
"Only an idiot stands in front of this rabble to say something," muttered Leo, wiping the fresh sheen of sweat from his forehead. "You shuffle a few of the right words together and make sure you look 'em in the eye."
He flashed the humble smile he'd been working on, waved away the congratulations as men leaned from the benches behind to slap him on the shoulder.
"You're going for a feeling. Make them think you're one of them. Prove the mob's behind you. You want to get something done, you pick a few men to talk to behind closed doors."
Durand looked almost admiring. A happy hint of the way he used to look at Leo before all this.
"I thought you were a blunt soldier." "I'm still a soldier."
Leo shifted his useless arm in his jacket and saluted the gallery.
"It's just a different battlefield."
"When did that fucker get eloquent?" grumbled Orso, slumping into his ridiculous little chair.
He had half a mind to applaud himself.
"Equality? He must be the most privileged bastard in here."
"Other than you," murmured Hildy.
"Other than me, yes. Thanks for that, Hildy. His family's had a seat in this bloody chamber for centuries. His grandfather was almost elected king himself and betrayed the Union when he lost the vote.
Like grandfather, like grandson, eh?"
"You can't deny folk warm to him, though."
"Oh, yes. People have always loved the young lion."
He still seemed to be the same honest Anglander, none of Swarbrick's flowery style. But these days he was playing the mob like his own personal orchestra and leading the nervous ex-lords wherever he pleased. Now he had a dozen virile young heroes of Angland on the front benches ready to nod along at his every utterance, as though it fell from the mouth of Eus himself. Also was starting to think that he was far more dangerous now than he had been with all his limbs.
"An appeal for loyalty. Can you imagine? A few months ago he was leading his own rebellion."
The hypocrisy was breathtaking, but the public appetite for hypocrisy appeared insatiable. Isha, who not long ago had enriched himself beyond the dreams of avarice by evicting impoverished tenants from common land, had risen to preach thrift in the most conspicuously humble, dirt-coloured clothes one could imagine.
"Citizens, please!"
Rizinau was struggling vainly, as he had been for weeks, to impose order on this shambles.
"Our constitution!"
And also started to laugh. A little snigger at first. He tried to hold it in, but it burst out again. An explosive giggle. Every face he noticed made it worse. The monstrously wealthy traitor, Isha, hiding in an honest man's feast day clothes. The turncoat loser, Brock, cheered to the rafters for his patriotism and prowess. The cowardly fantasist, Swarbrick, posing as the common man's fearless champion. The onslaught of overblown preaching, sentimental one-upmanship, angry stands on shifting principles, tearful declarations of shifting loyalty. The worst of mankind jammed into the sockets where the best should have been. A crown of turds.
"You're right," muttered Hildy, looking worried.
Orso was shuddering with mirth now, laughter echoing about the chamber. No one else looked amused, the chairman especially.
"Perhaps His Majesty might explain what he finds so amusing?"
"What don't I?"
Orso's eyes swam with tears.
"Your grand experiment? Your wondrous new system? Believe me, no one liked the old way of doing things less than I, but my forebears ran the Union for 6 centuries. You'll be lucky if you make it 6 months.
Captain Broad, we cannot have this cavalier disrespect for our assembly."
Broad wearily nudged his lenses up his nose and began to trudge towards the royal enclosure. Orso jumped up.
"Are we not all equal here?"
He addressed the public gallery in a wailing mockery of Swarbrick's overwrought delivery.
Does not every citizen deserve an equal chance to speak, even so base a creature as a king?
Let him talk, someone shouted. Let him talk himself into a noose.
I begin to wish you'd follow through on your threats, called Orso.
Bravery had descended inexplicably upon him as it had at Stauffenbeck. Bravery born of fear, boredom, frustration, and at least a little drunkenness. Far from heroic ingredients, to be sure, but no one asks what went into the pie so long as the results taste well.
You've hanged a good many decent people already. I'd rather join them than suffer this chorus of flatterers, thugs, and hypocrites.
How dare you!
But Rizenau's voice was more plaintive whine than outraged roar.
We are shaping the future!
Orso almost sympathized.
Take it from a man who's been there. You're the figurehead on a ship of fools. I dare say there are good people here and good intentions. You had a chance to make things better. And believe it or not, no one looked forward to seeing it more than I did. But you haven't achieved a damn thing. I know this is rich coming from me, but you're simply poor quality. You're a worthless bag of bluster, a spent match.
Never thought I'd agree with his fucking majesty.
There was a rustling as the representatives turned to stare towards the top of the aisle. One could make many criticisms of Judge, but never that she didn't make an entrance. She came stalking down the steps between the benches with all the swagger of a champion to the fencing circle, her stolen chains scraping her breastplate, her red hair greased into a flaming crest, the flinty point to a spearhead of grim-faced, hard-handed, red-clothed men. Her black eyes swept the benches with the kind of burning purpose the assembly had been sorely lacking, but also felt far from relieved as her gaze fell upon him.
"Sit down, Citizen Orso," she said.
Orso sat. Judge stopped before the high table, hands on hips and her bare feet planted wide.
I have watched the fucking pantomime in this ill-behaved nursery with growing disgust, she said.
Aye,
growled the burners in echoing unison.
You were meant to put things right, but all you've done is spill a sea of talk. One might almost say,
she leaned towards Rizenau, planting her clenched fists on the tabletop,
that those who have allowed this state of affairs to develop,
lips curling back from her teeth,
are, through intent or omission,
spraying spit as she snarled the words,
guilty of betraying the great change. We are the great change,
Rizenau pointed his chin at her, the wattle beneath his jowls wobbling.
We hear your carping, citizeness, but no reason for your attendance.
Judge grinned, a skull grin that got nowhere near her eyes.
Oh, I'm here to arrest the perpetrators.
One of the secretaries set down her pen to hurry around the high table, one ink-stained finger wagging.
With respect, you have no warrant here.
You sure? Brother Salby, could you produce our credentials?
With pleasure.
A rat-faced burner with a red-spattered cap stepped forward, sliding his hand into his jacket pocket. He brought it out in front of the secretary. There was nothing there but his fist. He smashed it into her face and knocked her down, her head bouncing on the tiles. She was left gazing up in amazement, with blood running from her broken nose. There was a stunned silence in the Commons round. Orso had the sense that, in that moment, all the rules had changed. Again. Then Judge burst out laughing.
You fools have got us
coddled as His Majesty used to be. As useless as the Open Council used to be. What is it about some folk that power makes them weak?
Rizenau had turned very pale.
I am still chairman of this assembly.
He gripped the gilded arms of his chair as though to prove it to himself, but the echoes of his voice had become scared squeaks in the high space of the dome above.
Captain Broad, see this woman removed forthwith.
Broad frowned towards the doors. He'd been doing it ever since Judge strutted in. She hadn't been the last person through. Dozens of folk wearing red had slipped into the chamber. Red caps, red sleeves, red rags tied around their heads, some with their hands behind their backs or hidden by their sides or wedged in their jackets. One grinning little girl carried a great dripping pot of paint, scattering red dots across the dirty marble. Burners. There were splashes of red everywhere. Broad lifted his head so he could peer through his lenses and saw red flat bows at the rail of the public gallery.
Captain Broad?
Brint had an odd tone suddenly, less of an order than a wheedle.
No, no, no,
purred Judge, the ragged train of her dress hissing across the dirty tiles towards Broad, those black eyes fixed on him all the way, and she reached up and touched his face with her fingertips. The gentlest touch, just under his ear, sliding down his jaw till she held his chin, and it made his flesh crawl and his heart pound both at once. He could have shoved her away. Bony as she was, he could have backhanded her across the hall. But all he did was stand there helpless. Helpless as he'd been, tied to a chair in a Valbeck cellar with her sitting astride him.
Captain Broad and I understand each other, she said softly.
And she was right, fates help him. Judge was trouble made flesh, the monster off the leash. She was madness and fire and violence and all the things he'd told himself he didn't want. But here's the sorry truth. If you really don't want a thing, you don't have to keep telling yourself so.
The little girl held up the paint pot and Judge stuck her hand into it. Drops spattered the tiles as she smeared four streaks across Broad's breastplate with her red fingers. You're one of us now.
She went up on her tiptoes to whisper,
but we know you always were.
No one did a thing as the burners brought out chains and started to shackle the men and women gathered around Rizenau. Not the king, sitting meekly on his little chair, not the young lion, watching warily from among his Anglanders, not the artists and the thinkers Rizenau had brought to the assembly. Even the rowdies in the public galleries had swallowed their tongues. And Broad was quietest of the lot. He knew a lost cause when he saw one.
You can't do this!
Rizenau clung to his chair as Salby caught him under the arm, dragging it squealing over the tiles.
I will go to the weaver!
Judge's red-rimmed eyes slid sideways to him.
Who do you think gave me the keys to the chamber, you fat fool?
Rizenau gaped at her as he was finally bundled from his chair and Salby snapped manacles shut around his wrists.
But we need a new constitution.
What we need is purpose, sneered Judge. What we need is purity. What we need is a fresh start.
Shall we hang 'em?
Asked Salby.
Hang 'em? No, wouldn't send at all the right message.
Judge dropped into Rizenau's chair and swept some of his papers off onto the floor to clear a space.
The bright future's come at last.
And she propped one bare foot up on the polished table and crossed the other one on top of it, their soles grey with dirt.
don't want to usher it in with a hanging, do we?
Broad took a sharp breath, only realized then that he'd been holding it the whole time. Mercy was the last thing he'd expected from Judge.
We need to kill these bastards with more guts, she said. We need something spectacular. Anyone got any ideas?
Not Mercy, then. It's very opposite. There was a brittle silence. The representatives glanced at each other, at Rizanow and his underlings being chained, at all the well-armed burners, no one wanting to stand out from the crowd. Then Ramnard cleared his throat.
I suppose there's always beheading?
And now those very same bastards who'd competed for Rizanow's notice that morning competed to dream up the most savage way to kill him in the afternoon.
I thought Kernsbeck's hanging machine was a great improvement.
Boring, sang Judge.
Hanged and emptied?
The methods of the old regime, sneered Judge.
In the north, I hear they sometimes crush miscreants with rocks.
Meh, grunted Judge.
Boiling alive? Impalement?
Execution by cannon?
If I may.
Swarbrick had risen, eyes shining with barely contained excitement. The situation calls for something unforgettable. Something that will serve as lesson and deterrent. Something representative of the crime. Judge narrowed her eyes at him.
Yes. Might I suggest that those who have fallen short of the principles of the great change should themselves fall in full view of the citizens they have failed from the top of the Tower of Chains, perhaps?
A murmur ran around the hall. Fear, awe, excitement, all three mixed up.
By the fates,
whispered Brint. A burner had closed a cuff on the one wrist the general had, but was scratching his head over what to do with the other one.
Huh!
Judge tipped her head back so she could gaze up towards the gilded dome, scratching gently at her rashy neck with the backs of her broken fingernails. Slowly, the smile spread across her face.
My thanks, Citizen Swarbrick, and the nation's thanks.
She jerked her head towards the door.
Take 'em up the Tower of Chains and push 'em off.
One of the arrested gave a little whimper. Another sagged against the high table.
No trial?
It was the king, and he wasn't laughing now. His throat shifted as he nervously swallowed. Judge grinned back at him.
The trial can be on the way down. The ground can give the verdict. You go with them, Broad. Make sure they all take the drop. Salby?
Judge?
Make sure he makes sure.
Broad nudged his lenses down to rub at the sore bridge of his nose, then nudged them back into place and started rolling up his sleeves, slowly, carefully. Helps to have a routine, after all. Then he calmly set about it, like it was any other task. Or maybe his body set about it, without the need for him to be involved at all. They organized the dozen prisoners who'd been behind the table into a line, Brint near the front, Rizanow near the back, burners around them with weapons drawn. Then they shuffled across the tiled floor to the aisle and up it between the silent benches. Everyone watched, no one spoke.
First things first,
Judge was saying as Broad trudged dumbly from the round behind the prisoners.
This ain't so much an assembly now as a courtroom, and in it we will purge the Union of its enemies.
The doors clattered shut. It was cold outside, but Broad's face felt hot. Across the square of marshals, square of equality, square of murder, whatever they were calling it now, curious eyes following them all the way. He narrowed his own eyes as a chilly gust swept up, brown leaves chasing each other across the flagstones.
"You cannot do this!" gurgled Rizenau. "You cannot do this!"
"Shut up, fat man," said Salby.
"I will see you all punished!"
Salby slapped him, and again, slapped him till his face was pink.
"Understand yet?"
Rizenau blew a bloody bubble from his nose, breath coming fast and his eyes a little crossed.
"Yes,"
he squeaked. Broad stepped through an archway and the tower of chains reared up ahead, slim as a lady's finger, white stone streaked with sooty dirt. He'd heard it toppled the day Baez destroyed the Eaters, and he'd had it rebuilt even taller. A woman near the front must have fainted when she saw it, suddenly collapsed, skirt billowing. Broad picked her up under the arm. Not rough, but firm. They could do this without being disrespectful. Guided her back into the queue. Closer came the tower, and closer. It was like he stood outside himself. Couldn't change a thing. If he didn't do this, someone else would, and he'd take the drop with the rest and never go home to Liddy and May.
"Captain Broad," hissed Brint from the side of his mouth, "you have to stop this now. You have a chance to stop this."
Broad didn't speak, wasn't sure he could speak. One of the prisoners was crying. Another tried desperately to wedge himself in the doorway to the tower, pressing his face to the stone.
"No! No! No!"
A burner clubbed him across the skull and he fell senseless, blood from his cut head pattering across the threshold.
"Oh, that's just brilliant," said Salby, hands on hips.
The man looked a bit put out.
"I couldn't just leave him there, could I? Give him a kick, then. Now we'll have to carry the bastard, or you will anyway."
"Fuck,"
said the man, bending down to heave him over one shoulder. Onto an endless stair of neatly cut stone, shoving the prisoners ahead. Echoing of footsteps, echoing of breath, of cries, of whimpers, of words. The tone changed the higher they got. Bluster at the bottom.
"How dare you?
I have friends, you know. You'll pay for this."
A glimpse of the rooftops outside the Agrient through a narrow window. Then came the bartering.
"I could give you 1,000 marks. 2,000.
Only let me reach my pocket. I have friends, rich friends."
Scrape, scrape, scrape of boots on stone. Then came the begging.
"Please. I have 3 children. They don't even know what's happened. Please! I tried to do the right thing. No one's more loyal to the great change than I am. Please!"
All wasted breath, all herded on up the endless stairs.
"Be strong," someone was whispering. "Be strong."
Broad didn't know if they were talking to themselves or someone else. What difference could being strong make? Strong or weak, the fall was still the fall. How many steps? Hundreds, it felt like. Rizenau's wheezing getting worse and worse behind him. Not a man built for steps.
"Get up there, you fat bastard! Can't we just roll him out here? In a window big enough?"
Laughter. Broad kept climbing, his legs burned, the breath cut at his chest. But he hardly felt it. Someone else's legs, someone else's breath. Out from the darkness and onto the roof, and he blinked at a clear, crisp day. Adua spread out below them, the chimneys jutting, plumes of smoke carried off by the chill wind, tiny ships at tiny wharves in the bay. Toy people swarming in a toy city.
"Damn, that's high!"
Salby took his red cap off to wipe his forehead, thin hair whipping around a smile full of yellow teeth. He'd found an empty crate somewhere, and he dragged it up next to the parapet, a little step to stand on. The prisoners were dragged from the stair, breathing hard from the climb, whooping sobs, puffs of smoke on the chill air. The burners watched in their red hats and their red sashes, and their clothes dashed and spattered with red paint, their weapons drawn and their eyes bright and righteous. Broad noticed a bird perched on the roof of the little turret above the stairwell, watching the whole business unblinking.
"Right then."
Salby and one of the other burners took the nearest prisoner under the arms and marched him across the rooftop. Tall fellow he was, with a birthmark under his ear. He went meekly enough till he got to the box. Then he snarled and twisted, his shoes scraping on the stones.
"Help us out, Bull!"
Broad caught a fistful of the man's jacket from behind, kicked his foot away, and helped shove him onto the box. He stood there, breathing hard, staring down in disbelief at the city below, feet level with the embrasure in front of him. Broad saw the lump on his neck bob as he swallowed.
"Tell my wife that I..." "Ah!"
Salby shoved him off. He turned in the air, surprised. Then he was gone. Broad felt like he should flinch, look away, cover his face with his hands. But he just watched. Sweat from the climb tickled under his red-daubed breastplate. He scratched at his sticky armpit. Salby peered eagerly over the battlements, like a boy who'd tossed something off a bridge into a river and was waiting for it to show up on the other side. There was a sharp smack far below, like a whip crack. Salby straightened up, puffing out his cheeks.
"Well, that's the end of that, eh?"
Salby had been a good man, in Styria and in Valbec, one of the better ones, better than Broad had been. A good man. What kind of good was this, though? What would Liddy have said to it? What would May? Broad felt like he should be crying, should be screaming, but all he did was check his sleeves were rolled right, then guide another one over from the stairs. A clerk, he thought, used to sit at the far end of the table with a ledger. The man had rolled his eyes at Broad when Rizenau was spouting off one time, and Broad had stopped himself smiling. Across the roof he went now, towards the box, stumbled on the way, but one of the burners caught him before he fell, helped him back up. Wouldn't want him falling before time.
"Sorry,"
he muttered, trying to get his foot up on the box, but it was trembling so bad he couldn't manage it.
"So sorry."
"Here you go."
Salby gave him a shove, and he tumbled straight over, then beckoned for the next one.
"I'm just a sculptor. I'm just a sculptor."
She was saying it over and over in a Styrian accent, which wasn't helping. No one liked a foreigner anymore.
"I'm just a sculptor."
Like a prayer. Higher and higher, faster and faster, more and more desperate.
"I'm just a sculptor."
She'd pissed herself. A trail of spatters across the roof, hem of her dress dragging through it.
"I'm just a sculptor."
"You're a sculptor found guilty of treason," said Salby,
and he pricked her up onto the box with the point of his knife.
"No, I am only here to help carve new statues. I'm just a..."
And over she went. It was the way he didn't even let them finish a sentence, like nothing they could say would matter, like they were rubbish tossed in a ditch. And those behind just stared, like it was nothing to do with them, even as they were herded closer to the parapet, even as Broad helped. Brint was next. They never had found anything to put that other cuff around, on account of his one arm. So when one of the burners caught hold of him, he shook the man off, waved the others away, walked without a word towards the box. He took a breath, stepped up himself, and stepped off himself, and made no sound on the way down. Broad blinked. Brint had been a good man. He was reasonably sure of that. He'd tried to do the right thing when everything fell apart. But good or bad? Right or wrong, the fall is still the fall. Some went off flailing, like they were trying to find something to catch hold of. Some dropped limp. Some made no sound. Some made strange ones as they were pushed. A shocked gasp, a surprised little hoot, a scared whimper. A lot of them screamed. Screamed all the way down. They were the worst. The scream and the way the scream suddenly stopped. The sound at the bottom, a sharp smack, but with a kind of wetness to it. And then maybe a distant spatter, like slops thrown from an upstairs window. A crowd had gathered now. You could hear them whooping and cheering and gasping down there in the city, beyond the dry moat. You didn't see a thing like this every day. Broad looked at the smear of red paint across his breastplate. Had he been forced to do this? Had he chosen to do it? Had he wanted to do it? Was he one of them, like Judge said? Had he always been? He took off his lenses, rubbed his eyes. You all right, Bull? Asked Sulby. Broad swallowed as he hooked his lenses back on, nudged them into that groove where they belonged. Helped to have a routine. Aye, he lied. Fine. Rizenau looked near dead already from the climb, face pale and beaded with sweat and tears, mouth hanging open, gasping for breath.
I wish to say...
You fucking said enough, said Salby, and jabbed his knife into the chairman's arse, herding him up onto the box. Vic watched another little speck fall from the Tower of Chains. Took a long time. Seemed a lucky thing that from where she stood, she couldn't see them hit the ground. In the slimy bottom of the drained moat, most likely. But she heard it, she thought. The faint scream carried on the wind suddenly cut off. Felt like the last shreds of hope for Sybalt's better world were cut off with it. Vic had borne witness to some horrors in her life, in the camps, in the mines, in the rebellion in Starikland, the uprising in Valbek, the battle at Stauffenbeck. But she'd never seen anything like this.
What have you done? She whispered.
Pike raised one hairless brow at her. What have we done, you mean? It was you who told me Rizenau had to go. And you were right.
Rizenau had to go, but...
She wanted to be sick as she said the name.
Judge?
Too many principles did not work for us.
So we'll try none at all?
Her voice had become a disbelieving shriek. The time for half measures is past. Pike looked evenly back at her. Sometimes the only way to improve something is to destroy it so it can be rebuilt better. There was a time she'd thought that burned face was a perfect mask for his feelings. Now she wondered whether there were any underneath. Sometimes, to change the world, we must first burn it down. Another little speck tumbled from the top of the Tower of Chains. Beyond the ruined walls of the Agrient, the crowd applauded.